Good morning, Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
Well, I'm on my way. I don't know where I'm going. I'm on my way. I'm taking my time, but I don't know where. Goodbye to Rose, is the queen of Corona. See me and Julio down by the schoolyard. See me and Julio down by the schoolyard.
Good morning, 810 News Radio 92.3. Happy Friday. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News, and Julio Diaz joins us now with Movie Reviews. He is the host, founder of the Pensacola Movie Club. They watch movies. You can follow them on Facebook and find out what they're going to watch and when, and then talk about it afterwards. Also, Let's Go Pensacola, this broadcast here on our station, 4 o'clock on Saturdays. Julio, welcome back, sir.
Hey, good morning, Andrew.
Good morning. Thunderbolts Asterisk, which is actually officially part of the title, right?
Yes. And the reason for that, without giving you any spoiler whatsoever, is made clear at the end of the movie.
Okay, so you have to wait for the end, but it is made clear.
Yeah.
Okay,
All right. There is a reason there is an asterisk on the title of this movie, and it's a pretty big reason, but I won't give that away.
Fair enough.
So this is the latest Marvel film. It's taking a place that kind of taking up the threads from several different projects that have come out over the past few years. There's a little bit from Black Widow, a little bit from the Hawkeye series, a lot from the Falcon and the Winter Soldier series, that sort of thing. But you don't really, I think, have to have seen those to get what's going on in this movie. They give you enough of a bring you up to date with everything in the film to I think, enjoy the film. I'm forgetting there's also a big character from Ant-Man and the Wasp in this as well. That's
okay.
one of the main characters.
So definitely still part of the MCU.
Yeah, it is absolutely part of the MCU, and I think is really kind of in a way that I think Captain America Brave New World was meant to, but does a better job of kind of launching us into the next sequence of what's going to be happening in the Marvel Universe.
Okay. I apologize. I acronymed Marvel Cinematic Universe, the whole scope of all these things that are all interconnected. Sorry, go ahead, Julio. You were saying.
Yeah. That being said, I think this movie really stands on its own in a lot of ways, and I don't think you necessarily have to have followed everything, none of the stuff we've mentioned, or, you know, the overall universe to really enjoy this movie.
Okay.
This is a movie about a bunch of kind of ragtag individuals who've been involved in various black ops operations for the U.S. government, who are basically going to be buried in the course of the director of the CIA, who is a character who's been in several of these different projects, played by Julia Louis-Dreyfus, during her impeachment hearings, as she's getting ready to, you know, kind of cover up everything that she's done and go into the next phase of what she's trying to do. And they instead of all killing each other as they were supposed to, they come together and form a team. I don't want to give too much more away.
Yeah,
than
that's
that,
fine. But, that's fine. But it's entertaining.
Yeah, great cast, led by Florence Pugh, who is absolutely the center and the heart of this movie. But Wyatt Russell and Hannah John Kamen, David Harbour, everybody's great in this movie. It's really good. It's probably the best MCU project since Guardians of the Galaxy 3.
Oh, high praise.
Which seems like it was a long time ago. It really wasn't that long ago. It was only a couple years ago, but it just seems like it was a long time ago. I mean, Deadpool and Wolverine was great too, but that feels different.
It does. Yeah, no, I see that.
And I think you're going to find that it has a lot of similarities to the Guardians of the Galaxy movies without feeling like a clone of those movies.
Oh, okay.
It is kind of very much
all right, the kind of tone. I get you.
Dysfunctional family, and it has a lot of things to say, but there's still a lot of action and humor to it too.
The Surfer. We got three to get to quickly. The Surfer.
Nick Cage. So that may
cool.
be all right. Some people need to hear.
You're in or you're out. Based on that, I got
yeah.
you.
Yeah, this is he plays a man who goes back to the idyllic beach that he grew up on with his son and would go out and do some surfing, and they run into a locals only mentality there at the beach where, you know, if you don't live here, you can't surf here, and you know, it becomes a psychological thriller between
okay.
him competing with these, you know, the yeah, and we might, that's something, a theme we might be familiar with here in the Pensacola area.
Exactly, I can see it being locally yeah. interest. Rosario.
Unfortunately, this is not the story of how Rosario Dawson expressed her undying love for me.
One can hope. There could be a sequel.
There are things that people just would find too unbelievable even in a fictional movie. So.
But this movie is actually about...
This is a horror movie. It is about a Wall Street broker who goes to clean out her grandmother's home after she's passed and finds a secret compartment in her home where there's these bark rituals that her grandmother had been taking care of.
Happens every day.
That had been, you know, a long familial line. And she's got to deal with that.
And Raid 2?
Yeah, not to be confused with The Raid, which is there were two of those as well that were these Indonesian action movies that are very, very high praised.
Okay.
This is an Indian movie. It's also a sequel to an Indian action movie that was very high praised.
So well, confused.
This is how you know things are different in India. These are about these films are about heroic income tax officers who go out and raid these. Yeah, you wouldn't see that in the States, I don't think.
All right, well, that's a little bit different. What are you guys going to watch next week?
It's a movie I've been looking forward to for some time, and if you listen to Let's Go Pensacola, you've probably heard me mention this film. It's called Clown in a Cornfield, and this is a horror movie. It's based on a very popular young adult novel. And the big hook for me here is that it's directed by a guy named Eli Craig, who happens to be the son of Sally Field, among other things.
Okay.
But more importantly, was the director of a great movie that came out about 15 years ago called Tucker and Dale vs. Evil. If you haven't seen that, I highly recommend it. It's a very, very funny horror/satire film. That's very much worth seeing, and so I'm hoping some of that kind of energy is coming to this film as well.
All right. Julio Diaz hosts Let's Go Pensacola, 4 o'clock tomorrow on this station and also the Pensacola Movie Club. Follow them on Facebook, watch a movie, and talk about it. Julio, have a great week. We'll talk to you next Friday.
All right. Thanks, Andrew.
John Pickens has traffic on the fives.
Couple accidents to let you know about. If you're on West Michigan Avenue and Dallas Avenue, that roadway is still blocked, and we had another accident that happened because of this one at West Michigan Avenue and Denver Avenue. So that area is just pretty well at a standstill right now. Other than that, I-10, I-110 are looking good. I'm John Piggins with your traffic on the fives.
There is a big difference in the type of service you get from companies that do air duct cleaning. Hi, this is Todd from Gulf Coast Air Care, and I want you to know the difference between a quality job and a blow-and-go duct cleaning job. Let me ask you this. Do you really think you can get a 1-carat diamond for $10? It's just like getting a $99 whole house duct cleaning. There are guidelines from the National Air Duct Cleaners Association and also the Better Business Bureau. A true inspection, cleaning, and restoration of an AC system includes the equipment and ductwork by a licensed and certified company. It's like a full detail for your car instead of the cheapy method of running it through a $5 wash and go. Air conditioners are expensive. Keeping them clean and well-maintained is a guaranteed way to have better health and comfort. So you decide what works for you, the $5 wash and go or a full detail top to bottom. At Gulf Coast Air Care, we take pride in the certifications and the licenses that we hold. If you want the best quality and award-winning customer service, you can find us on the web at gulfcoastaircare.com or call 934-2768.
As a business owner, you've got a lot on your plate. Managing staff, growing your business, training new hires, and more. With so much going on, you need Avalon. As an IRS-certified PEO, Avalon HR can help. From running your payrolls, remitting state and federal taxes, workers' compensation insurance, employee benefits, and our HR expertise. Avalon HR lets you focus on your core business while we handle the rest. Employing made easy. AvalonHR.com.
Our daughter, Jessie, loves playing detective.
A clue.
But since we discovered she has sensitive skin, we've been playing detective, too.
We thought the problem was our puppy.
But it was actually our old detergent.
Aha. Uh-huh.
So we switched to Tide Free and Gentle. Tide Free and Gentle provides an excellent Tide clean, and it doesn't leave behind irritating residues like dyes or perfumes, so it's gentle on your skin.
Case closed.
If it's got to be clean, it's got to be Tide Free and Gentle.
Hi, this is Todd Thompson, President and CEO of the Greater Pensacola Chamber of Commerce. Tune in to the Pensacola Expert Panel for the Chamber Connection Show that will keep you informed on what's going on with your Chamber of Commerce. Tune in this Monday morning at 10 to find out about our upcoming events, all of our different programs, and what's happening with our local business community. It's the Chamber Connection Show every other Monday at 10 on the Pensacola Expert Panel.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
Start your mornings off informed with all things Pensacola on the Pensacola Morning News with Andrew McKay on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today for the Transgressors Memorial Service, remembering those who have transgressed against the great spirit of inclusion and must forever be cast into the abyss of dead names. Let's join Brother Andrew remembering those who we have lost.
Our first remembrance is for the president who was elected after Joe Biden, may we never say his name. In a little reported move, the guy who wants to plant flagpoles outside the White House issued an executive order resurrecting a project from late in his first term that would create a National Garden of American Heroes in celebration of the 250th birthday of the United States. He is reallocating slashed funding from the National Endowment for the Humanities into a $33 million commission for 250 sculptures of significant citizens to be displayed as an as-yet-undecided location in honor of American greatness. There's just so much wrong here that it's almost hard to know where to begin. Obviously, no one should be celebrating this country that was built on injustice, racism, sexism, oppression, and religious bigotry. But putting that aside, the premise of the so-called great man theory of history this president believes in is also mistaken. For every hero we honor, there were countless ordinary people who surrounded that person, enabled that person, and toiled in obscurity so that person could have their achievement. We simply reject the premise that one person is greater than another. All people are equally great. Or, to paraphrase the beloved prophet of modern mediocrity, Garrison Keillor, the United States is a place where all citizens are strong, good-looking, and above average. Surely you understand that we can't promote our faith in the proletariat by commissioning $200,000 statues of specific proles. But beyond this, the list itself is a bizarre hodgepodge, including gunmaker Samuel Colt, colonizer Christopher Columbus, Chief Sitting Bull, a man who actually slaughtered Americans, although, of course, we agree they deserved it, Kobe Bryant, but not Michael Jordan, warmongers George Patton and Norman Schwarzkopf, human rights opponent Antonin Scalia, but also Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and even at least one Canadian, Alex Trebek. Do Whitney Houston, Jesse Owens, Annie Oakley, and Edward R. Murrow really all belong in the same group together? It's just weird. So no, we do not need yet another wasteful public expenditure to teach Americans about the triumphs of particular Americans. It will only perpetuate the false narrative of American exceptionalism. Let's instead call for a return of funding to the actual canceled project of collecting first-person accounts of Native Americans who attended U.S. government-run boarding schools. Certainly a much more noble use of public funds than this silly exercise in jingoistic vanity. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend!
Second, the Republican-dominated Florida legislature, because of their hostile, mean, and unkind attack upon vegans and vegetarians this week, in passing an agriculture bill that prohibits food products from being labeled as milk, poultry, eggs, or meat, unless they actually contain milk, poultry, eggs, or meat. Yes, Senate Bill 700 actually seeks to prohibit beef alternatives from being called beef, chicken alternatives from being called chicken, egg substitutes from being called eggs, and specifically attacks the very common practice of calling nut-derived liquid drinks as milk.
So would it still be okay for the product to say this is oat milk?
I think what we're looking for more is the truth in labeling. So almond beverage, oat beverage, something like that.
That's right. Despite years of successfully encroaching on the grocery store shelf placement of products actually containing chicken and cattle products and confusing citizens into wondering whether almond milk might not actually need to come in whole, 2% and skim varieties, this bill now forces a complete unraveling of everything the para-food manufacturers have been striving for. But to be clear, the real problem we have with this bill is not that it forces the makers of almond milk to seek some substitute terminology such as almond beverage, almond drink, liquid almonds, or drinkable almonds, or even almond juice, which at least one Republican, State Representative Alex Andrade, maligned as the patently unfunny object of juvenile satire.
Members, there are few truths that we hold to be self-evident. Die Hard is a Christmas movie. almond and cashew milk is more accurately described as nut juice. And President's library should be located here in the state of Florida.
Really, sir? Nut jokes? Have you no decency? No. The labels are not our real objection to this bill. The basic problem here is the effort to draw hard and fast boundaries between discrete categories of food, the kind of boundaries against which we stand wholeheartedly. Who does the Florida legislature think it is to tell the poor little almond that it can't identify as a cow product? If cashew drippings want to identify as cashew milk, who are they to stand in the way? Just because some agricultural inspector guessed that this liquid was pecan-based at its birth doesn't mean he can't be mistaken. If the juvenile pecan emissions identified as pecan milk, that's their prerogative. Why can't egg substitutes identify as real eggs? Why can't seasoned bean curd identify as beef? And why can't processed wheat and peas transition into being real chicken? Instead of trapping these aspirational foods into the categories guessed upon them at their birth, we should be providing meat-affirming care so that these yummy vegan alternatives can be referred to by their preferred adjectives. But no, the same legislature that consistently tries to oppress people who are gender fluid shows themselves to be just as hurtful toward nut fluids, striving to prevent them from enjoying even the smallest spurt of recognition. No, let Florida continue to be the land flowing with imitation milk and honey, I say, and protect breakfast eaters in the Sunshine State from having to say they put nut juice on their Fruity Pebbles. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
Finally, a quiet, trophy-free moment of appreciation for the groundbreaking work done recently in the Canadian province of Quebec, or as the locals say it, Quebec, by Superior Court Judge Andres Guerin, who finally handed a group of non-traditional families equal justice before the law. The question at hand was whether a throuple, a group of three lovers, or a quadruple, a group of four lovers, or really any sized uple you might imagine, could have legally recognized filial ties and parental rights to children who aren't biologically related to them. And the court answered with a resounding, "May we!" In this particular case, three families, a man with two women and four children, two lesbians and a male sperm donor, and a couple with the wife's best friend, who was their surrogate, all wanted to put their three names on the birth certificate of a child, which currently only has space for two names. Well, they sued, and Gaia-luya, they won. As the judge wrote, quote, "Having a maximum of two filiation links sends the message to multi-parent families and society in general that only families deemed normal with a maximum of two parents represent family structures that are valid and worthy of legal recognition. This message reinforces and perpetuates the disadvantages experienced by those who are part of a non-traditional family," end quote. In other words, even though polygamy is still technically illegal in Canada, it would be wrong to deny the children and the adults of polyparental families their equal rights. Well, all I can say is if you've ever wondered what the plus in LGBT plus was for, now you know. What could be more plus than having bonus parents? After all, don't we always say it takes a village? And now we can more accurately say it takes an autonomous collective of an indeterminate number of non-permanent, consensually non-monogamous, semi-sexually connected parental units. Or an anarcho-syndicalist commune, to quote one British expert on post-feudalistic political revolutions. And isn't this such a wonderful counterstrike against the restrictive, oppressive, and unimaginative concept of the two-parent nuclear family that artificially restricts the love given to and offered by a child? Besides, why should we be so limited in what we think of as nuclear? Why not have a nucleus that's more like real-life nuclei? Hydrogen is one proton and an electron, sort of a single-parent, single-kid scenario. Helium, two protons, two neutrons, and two electrons. Is that not also natural? And why not a beryllium family with four protons, five neutrons, and four electrons? Nature certainly doesn't even seem to validate what we call the nuclear family. And why must one size nucleus fit all? Can there not be many atoms of many dimensions and sizes, or molecules, or even synthetic compounds in the periodic table of family structures? And just think of the practical benefits. Whenever there's a question about permission to go to the movies or attend a sleepover, when one of the dads isn't sure, he can say, "Go ask your mom," and then go ask your other mom, and eventually go ask your other mom. Do you not begin to see the great benefit of having almost any number of co-parenting plus? Yes, we love this development because it chops away at the institutionalized relationshipism of modern society. It deconstructs the monogamy privilege and declares death to nucleonormativity. It literally brings egalite, fraternite, and liberté to the decolonization of love. Now, parenting, just like sexual orientation and gender identity, can literally be whatever we want it to be. And if the Canadians can recognize polyparenting, maybe one day they can also bring freedom and inclusion to that other flailing institution of marriage by fully and legally embracing plural love. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
And now, brethren, sistren, and otherin, having been cleansed of these hurtful words, give each other the holy virtue signal and go forth and transgress no more.
We're just a tad late to traffic. Is there anything going on they need to know about, John?
Well, if you're on Michigan Avenue and Dallas Avenue, we've got disabled car and hit and run crash with roadblocks, so avoid that area.
All right, very good. David, anything hot for us in the next 10 seconds?
The first leg of the Triple Crown starts on Saturday with the Kentucky Derby. The favorite to win this year is a three-year-old horse named Journalism. Journalism for the win, Andrew.
The first time Journalism has ever won anything. We'll be back with the wrap. We got Craig Heinzman and Ed Carson joining me in studio to talk about the news of the week. Stick around.
Fox News, I'm Chris Foster. The April jobs report from the Labor Department comes in stronger than most economists expected.
There were 177,000 new jobs created. The unemployment rate held steady at 4.2%. More people were in the workforce last month. The labor force participation rate rose to 62.6%.
Fox's Jenny Casola. President Trump says he's going to take away Harvard University's tax-exempt status, and he wants to rename Veterans Day and add another day of celebration.
President Trump saying we need to honor the unique U.S. sacrifices in both world wars and plans to change Veterans Day to Victory Day for World War I and May 8th to Victory in World War II Day. Posting on Truth Social, we won both wars. Nobody was close to us in terms of strength, bravery, or military brilliance, but we never celebrate anything.
That's Fox's Lillian Wu. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning. It's 8:31 at News Radio 92.3. Beautiful morning right now. We've got partly cloudy skies here, 72 degrees in Pensacola. Local UFC fighter Cedriquez Dumas is facing serious charges in Escambia County. The 29-year-old was arrested this week on several charges, including home invasion with a firearm, battery, and drug charges. No details on that arrest have been released yet, but we'll let you know as soon as we learn more. This arrest coming just a few weeks now after his last fight, where he was knocked out at UFC 314 in Miami. The Escambia Children's Trust will be back at the next Board of County Commissioners meeting to discuss back taxes owed to CRA districts. Commission Chairman Mike Kohler wants to use the money for infrastructure improvements like lights and sidewalks at parks. Commissioner Lumen May wants money to go to an interlocal agreement with the Children's Trust and let them use the money for the summer youth employment program. Another commissioner says it looked like the reason for the initial clawback has changed.
It seems like we got away from last year, the reason why you wanted the money before. Both of you. I mean, I think Mike's still on board with that. And now we're turning, we're just making a jobs program out of this money now.
District 1 Commissioner Steve Stroberger there, he said it appeared commissioners had... It appeared towards the end of that discussion that commissioners had appeared allowing the trust to keep taxes owed for the previous 2 years to fund that employment program while sending last year's taxes back to the CRA districts to fund infrastructure improvements. No official decisions were made. The Children's Trust Board will discuss their end of that, and then another public hearing is now set for May 15th. Well, the Navy Blue Angels are taking part in an air show in Fort Lauderdale over the weekend. They had a practice yesterday over Fort Lauderdale Beach. The show this year featuring a new maneuver where six planes roll 360 degrees all at the same time. That maneuver is meant to showcase the teamwork and dedication of the Navy and the Marine Corps. But if you're going to be out on Pensacola Beach Sunday, you may see them buzz the beach on their way home that night. Escambia County Public Schools held their annual Battle of the Books competition at Booker T. Washington High School late last month. That happened with 341 students from 32 different area schools and concluded with winners in multiple grade levels, including the third grade Ultimate Readers from Helen Carroll Elementary and the Tate High School, and winners from Tate High School in the high school category. Governor Ron DeSantis celebrating what he's calling the largest immigration operation in Florida history. The governor announced yesterday that more than 1,100 people had been caught in immigration enforcement operation over 5 days in the last week. He said that's the largest number in a single state in 1 week in ICE's history. ICE, the Department of Homeland Security, and Border Patrol were all involved in what was called Operation Tidal Wave. The governor said those arrested included violent offenders, gang members, sex offenders, fugitives, and others who pose significant public safety risks. It's 8:35 at News Radio 92.3. John Pickens has our traffic on the fives.
Brought to you by Executive Landscaping. Call them today for all your commercial and premium landscaping needs. The only thing that's going to bother you this morning on West Michigan Avenue and Dallas Avenue, we've got a hit-and-run crash with roadblock and also a disabled vehicle with roadblock there. So definitely avoid Michigan Avenue at that point near Softly Field. Other than that, we are looking good. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
We will have a small chance of rain for this afternoon. Showers and thunderstorms possible. 30% chance of rain, high near 81. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping to 68. Rainy day on Saturday with an 80% chance of showers and thunderstorms, high near 80 degrees. Saturday night, temperatures dropping near 65. Rain chances dropping out of that Sunday with a high near 78 and a low near 62. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Morning Weather Center.
Thank you very much, Brooke. And 72 right now across the area. We've got mostly cloudy skies. Our next news in 30 minutes. We've got breaking news anytime it happens. I'm David Wayne for News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, and dependable. And your money now. Markets at the opening bell are up today. The Dow's up 505 points at 41,247. S&P up 60 points at 56.64, NASDAQ up 143 at 17.854. 10-year bond rate up a bit, 4.277%. Gold price is up 41.30 at 32.6350. Silver price is up 30 cents this morning. And we've got a mixed crypto market. Bitcoin up by a couple hundred. Ethereum's down. Solana's down. Dogecoin up by a fraction of a cent this morning. XRP is down by a penny. Taking a look at a few of our financial headlines. The April jobs report is due to be released today. And it has been released. The April jobs report is out, and it's better than most analysts were expecting. The Labor Department says 177,000 new jobs were added last month. The initial forecast had been for somewhere in the neighborhood of just over 130,000. Well, President Trump's tariffs may mean fewer toys under the Christmas tree this year. The CEO of the Toy Association telling the New York Times this week that because of tariffs, the industry is facing a frozen supply chain that could put Christmas at risk. It is 8:37, our next news at 9, breaking news anytime. I'm David Wayne for News Radio 92.3.
Are you ready for a triple dose of wit, insight, and laughter? Tune in to News Radio Pensacola for the Markley, Van Camp, and Robin Show from 11 to 2. Your daily dose of engaging conversation and hilarious banter. Join Jamie Markley, David Van Camp, and Scott Robbins as they tackle the biggest news stories, pop culture moments, and everything in between. They'll keep you entertained, informed, and laughing out loud from start to finish. Don't miss a minute of the fun. Tune in to the Markley, Van Camp, and Robin Show, 11 till 2 on News Radio Pensacola.
You know, if you're thinking about that next vehicle, trying to decide what to go with, what you want to buy, where you want to buy it from, let me recommend Frontier Motors. You've heard me talking about them for years. Dave Ramsey talks about them. You see the bumper stickers and the license plate frames on the cars driving around town that recommend them, just like we do. But look, when you buy a car there, it's going to be a year, two, three, maybe 4 years young, low miles, good condition, what they call A-quality cars. You know, they only buy A-quality cars because they're selling cars to you that you're going to drive for several years. You know, they warranty them to 100,000 miles or 10 years because they want cars only that you know you can count on. You know, you're not going to buy a new car. You're going to buy something that's gently used and it's going to be in good condition, like I said, low miles, and then you're going to drive it for a while. Now, one of the things about Frontier that I like is they want to go out of their way, and they do go out of their way to be helpful. That means if you're buying a car from somebody else, you know, like Jimmy on Facebook Marketplace or whatever, and he doesn't have a Carfax for you, take the VIN to Frontier and they will give you a Carfax for free. Why would they help you buy a car from Jimmy on the corner? Because they can. Because it's helpful. Because it might help you avoid making a mistake or a car buying purchase that you don't want to make. That's how they think about their opportunities, to help you, to be a service. So when I say Frontier Motors serving the Pensacola community for more than 25 years behind the Big Buffalo on Beverly Parkway, I mean that.
I said a hip, hop, the hip, hip hop, you don't stop. Rap,
I will definitely call you back later then.
Come on, wrap it up.
Big sharp it up.
Okay, you know what? Wrap up the circle thing. Come on.
Commissioner Parker, wrap it up, please.
Okay.
Okay, everybody, that's a wrap.
All right, I made a terrible mistake. I took a bite of this guava with cheese that you brought me, Ed, and now I don't know how I'm going to make this work. I timed this terribly.
Just sit down and relax. Oh, that's your line. I'm sorry.
Ed Carson is the owner, founder, operator of Carson Level Inc., I guess. Carson Construction and Carson Level Inc. Is that right?
Correct. That's correct.
All right. Yeah. Craig Heinzman from Marcus Point Baptist Church, a great friend, is supposed to be here. Say a prayer for him. I don't know where he's at. He's normally super responsive by phone or by text, and I haven't heard from him this morning. I did confirm with him earlier this week, so I hope he's okay. I hope he didn't get into a wreck or something like that trying to get here. But in any case, we got Ed here. And Ed, you and I can have a great conversation, and we will.
Sure.
Because right now, Escambia and Santa Rosa County are dealing with growth. I mean, we're definitely dealing with growth issues. And particularly, of course, you're in Santa Rosa County.
Yes.
And you build things over there. You build commercial construction.
Correct.
But we've got this big story that we have been talking about a lot. A group of people that live on a dead-end street, Ibis Road, just on the other side of Avalon from the courthouse. The hangar is right there. Trump Boulevard is right there, if that helps people who don't know the area. They have been fighting for years to keep the dead-end street closed, which they thought they had a promise, and they did have a vote from the county commission, past county commission,
right,
to not open. There's a parcel of land that belongs to the county, and now you've got a developer in there who's going to build a subdivision in the forest, okay?
Right.
And they started building the road, which they thought, that the residents thought, could not be done. Apparently, the development order had permission to build the road. Then staff revoked the permission to build the road. We are definitely heading for a lawsuit now because the county commission, on the one hand, says we are not going to do this, but they did give the permission. This, I mean, everything has gone wrong here that can go wrong, right?
Yeah, it's a no-win proposition, obviously, or situation. You know, on one hand, I have a lot of empathy for the folks that are in the subdivision.
Right.
On the other hand, I've got a signed development order. What does that mean? I mean, now we're saying we can claw back on a development order.
People don't know. What does that actually mean? What does the DO do for you when you're building something? And I mean, how much reliance goes into what you do with that DO?
Well, 100% reliance. And furthermore, whoever's lending the money to build this project is also relying on it. So I don't know in this particular case if it would cause a default on the loan. It could. I don't know what that does for the project. I just know that, like you said, this is a mess.
Well, you had several people got up there. Austin Tenpenny got up there and talked about this. Sean Owens talked about this. You know, a lot of people in Santa Rosa County who are, you know, in development got up there and spoke. And they basically said, are you telling me now that we can go through the whole process of securing a DO, getting funding, making a plan, and staff can just revoke an element of the development order because the political winds have changed? That could be disastrous for Santa Rosa County that's experiencing lots of growth right now, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, I guess the folks that are in favor of no growth, this is probably a good thing.
I heard, I forget who it was who said it. Maybe it was Austin Tenpenny. Somebody made the comment that, you know, all this is going to do is kill growth. And I'm sure, you know, the Pitchfork Posse types, who I think that is their goal,
right,
is zero growth is the only thing that's going to make them happy. And they're thinking, oh, my God, we're finally winning. You know, yeah, chaos is the only way to win, right?
Yeah. And this is definitely that.
So, on the other hand, it seems like it's like one case. You know what I mean? It's just sort of one, it's one, let's say, minor element of one particular DO on one particular subdivision. Does it send enough of a ripple signal that everything is at risk, or is that being overly dramatic?
I think it's probably being overly dramatic, Andrew. What I worry about is that I'm vice chairman of the zoning board, mm-hmm. and I always preach, you know, we're doing this variance, we're doing this or that. And what precedent does that set going forward? It's not unusual at all for somebody to come and ask for a variance and have a handful of pictures of, for instance, on the sign size. Look at all these signs that you've already given variances on. Obviously, I deserve one.
Does a variance, I've always wondered this, does a variance create real entitlement to future similar variances? Or I'm like, that a court would recognize? Or is that just the perception of what needs to be done in order to be fair?
I can't really speak to the legal side of it, but I think that to be fair,
mm-hmm. yeah,
it would.
Okay.
For sure. And that's what's always concerned me about, because we hand out a lot of variances.
Yeah. Well, I mean, right. And people are coming to you all the time and asking right. for variances to the point where, I mean, here in Escambia County, you know, opt-outs for the sector plan are just, you know, we give them out like breath mints. I mean, there's not even a conversation. Not really. Not anymore. You know, a couple of local people tried real hard to try to restrict that, and they just basically got ignored. And so here we go. You know, it's great to have rules, but only if the rules get followed. And if the rules get variances, eventually the rules don't matter anymore, right?
Right. And, you know, another thing I say a lot is, you know, if this is going to be in the land development code, we either need to enforce it or we need to just get rid of it.
Or get rid of it, right.
One or the other.
Which is, I know Colton Wright has brought this up when you're talking about the rural protection line, you know, right. that, I mean, if you're going to have it, but don't make it and then not enforce it, because it does nothing. It's just right. it's a statement of sentiment that never gets enforced. We're talking to Ed Carson. Here on the wrap, Craig Heinzman is supposed to be here. He's just not here today. And like I said, I seriously hope he's okay, because he's normally super responsive when I text him. So I genuinely pray for him, because I don't know what's going on. But John Pickens has traffic on the fives. John?
Brought to you by Knox Pest Control, their family serving your family since 1929. For information on a free pest or termite quote, you can visit knoxpest.com. Knox knocks them out. Still dealing with the mess, I want to call it, on West Michigan Avenue. We still got a roadblock associated with Michigan and Dallas Avenue, a disabled vehicle which caused another accident. It's all in that general area, so just be aware of that. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Thanks so much, John. Back to Ed Carson since I know you're an expert on development, that's why I kind of like being able to pick your brain a little bit on this stuff. The other issue with Ibis Road, the kind of the big picture issue for them, is not the question of whether rights are being violated on whose side, but it's this idea of dead end streets. And I know Colton Wright very honest, very sincere assessment, saying when you're a car driver, you want a grid because that's how you solve the traffic problems that you residents are always complaining about. But then the residents turn around and, as sometimes happens, the residents ask for contrary things.
Sure.
You know, we want lots of services and we want low taxes. Well, you know, pick.
No taxes.
Right. No taxes. Right. Less. Or, you know, we want free flowing traffic, but we don't want grids and we don't, you know, like. So do you have a perspective on that? Because I feel the tension. As a resident, I don't want to live on a through street. As a driver, I want every street to be a through street.
I'm exactly the same way. I mean, who wouldn't want to live on a cul-de-sac?
Right.
Your kids can play out in the front on the pavement. You don't have to worry. There's not a lot of maybe unsavory folks kind of cruising around, because
sure.
you got a bunch of dead ends.
When you live on a dead end, you know all the people and all their cars.
I totally get that. But, you know, it's, I guess, all these theories about these interconnected neighborhoods, and we get it in the commercial side of it too. They want each of the commercial properties to interconnect. And interestingly enough, I've got a friend who's been told they've got to connect with the property next door, and it creates a serious safety problem, in my opinion, mm-hmm. because it's a doctor's office and you have elderly patients trying to cross this parking lot that now is essentially a thoroughfare to the property next door. So I know this doesn't really work too well, but to me it's almost like a case by case.
Yeah, you know, you say that it's true, and I think of some of the cases we've had where questions of easements being taken away that, you know, kind of like it wasn't built to be a road, but people use it as a cut through. Look, drivers are like water. They will go wherever the least resistance is. If there is a path around, they will go that way. If it's through a parking lot, if it's through a gas station, if it's through a, you know, a U-Haul line, I mean, whatever, people will find a way to go around. And then if they're doing it too much, somebody complains, and then you either put a barricade or you put up speed humps to try to destroy the road you built or to destroy the access you built. I mean, this is the good and the bad, right? This is what drivers wanted. And it's good drivers do that because they're getting out of my way. The more they get out of my way, the more we all get to go where we want to go, right?
Sure. Yep. And I think a good example of that was Tiger Point during the broken bridge.
Yeah.
And them cutting through Tiger Point.
And that wound up being I can't remember. I know this because we talked about it so many times, but the name of that little Tibet Drive, that little road cut through that is basically had been just kind of a strip of asphalt off of the parking lot at the golf club and went over to that subdivision. But people who lived in that area knew. And when everybody was trying to go up Garcon Point Bridge Road, and the traffic would be backed up on 98, they'd get off and go through the subdivisions, which drives the people in the subdivisions crazy, but actually facilitated traffic flow in some sense.
Yep.
And that eventually led to that road kind of failing and then having to be rebuilt as, you know, now that we don't really need it as much anymore, but it is available. So I'm so torn. I hate it when, speed bumps go in and ruin roads, but I would hate to have people driving through my neighborhood all day long too.
Yeah.
Which, do you have is it really case by case? Is that
it is.
Okay. So we should have a traffic and planning board that makes these.
I hate more boards, but.
More government.
Yeah.
But you know, it's interesting because there isn't a board devoted to traffic issues like that, right? It's just the traffic department. And then if people complain.
Correct. I mean, when we're making decisions on the zoning board, we try to take traffic into account. In fact, it's probably in the top two things, maybe the first thing we take into account when we're looking at, you know, these projects that they're trying to get approved.
Well, when neighbors come to complain about the upzoning, for instance,
right,
what they're always complaining about is traffic. I mean, among other things, but they're at least complaining about that, right?
Correct.
So you do always think about it. I don't know what the answer is to that. I just know it comes up often enough. And a lot of times it feels like you kind of are relying on the knowledge of the engineer, the knowledge of the traffic person, and maybe the knowledge of the commissioner, you know, and that's, I mean, maybe there could be a better way to do that. Maybe it's not often enough that it justifies a board. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. I do know that, you know, sometimes the geometry of the site, is there swamp on two sides of it? You know, there's more things in play than just we need to interconnect, we don't need to interconnect.
Right.
There's a lot of factors.
You know, one of the things I had a whole bunch of other topics that are more like everybody play topics. And yeah. I don't know, because I love picking your brain on development, because I know this is what you do for a living. And, you know, you're one of those evil, terrible, horrible developer people.
You go to Publix today?
Yeah, exactly. You know, I live in a building that was built by developers. Exactly. I work in a building that was built by developers.
You eat pastries from Publix.
I do. I was literally eating one when we came on the air.
Supporting those developers. Yep. Okay.
Those terrible guys who do what we want them to do, right?
Right.
Because if nobody wanted it, you'd be out of business.
Correct.
But the land development code rewrite, this land development task force, that's been going. I have not watched any of those meetings. I always have to limit myself, you know, because I will gorge on everything and I'll watch it and I'll run out of all my time. Have you been watching that?
I haven't. I hope to at least get a look at what they're doing here shortly. I'm, of course, more interested in what affects business and commercial development, which is usually a lot less feisty than the residential part. But I haven't looked at it yet. I took part in the last two.
Okay.
And it gets a little contentious, to put it mildly.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, they're all issues that people who care about.
Sure.
I mean, one of the biggest issues is the clear-cutting issue.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, you take down all the trees on that plot of land, and that's going to have a stormwater effect.
Right.
That's obviously going to have an aesthetic effect.
Mm-hmm.
That certainly can have a shade and, you know, air quality effect. And, you know, the people who love trees, I'm one of the people who loves trees.
Me too.
I want to keep as, I mean, what I love about this area is all the foliage. But I get the argument that it's very, very difficult to keep any of the trees because of the putting in the new soil and what you're trying to do in terms of running pipes and everything else. I really get both sides. And look, I live on a lot that was once trees. You know, yeah. Almost every house in this area was once a lot that was trees. And how do you close the door after you're inside the room? You know, is kind of always my concern. But is that something you guys deal with in commercial too? I mean, the clear cutting is, you know, I'll give you an example. I went to the industrial park off 87 that has the Hershey's and all the other things that are going in there. And, you know, my first reaction when I drove in there a couple weeks ago was, oh, those trees are gone. Well, of course, that was part of the plan. But, you know, forest, if you don't stop taking away the forest, at some point we don't have any, right? We become LA, and that's nobody wants that.
Nobody. What we get into usually is heritage-type trees, big, giant live oaks. Sometimes you just can't help. There's a giant live oak in the middle of your site where your building's going, and then there's mitigation processes you can go through.
You're a developer. Do you love to tear down trees?
No, I don't wake up in the morning and say, let me go tear down trees and spend more money to tear them down, haul them off, and replace them.
Right.
I mean, that.
Because that's how people think, you know?
Right.
And
right.
Just maybe. So, but dealing with the heritage. Actually, let's come back to that in just a second because I know we got this traffic thing on Michigan. John Pickens has traffic on the fives. John?
Well, we're actually rolling accident free right now, right? Delay free. So, good news on that. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Perfect. All right. So, you said with the heritage trees, dealing with that, it's sometimes you just cannot work around it,
right?
Based on the site plan and the needs of the needs of whatever you're building.
Exactly. I mean, you wouldn't want to render a 2-acre site on Highway 90 useless because there's two or three heritage oaks in the center of the site.
Well, but, sure you would. We love our trees.
Well, then you think a little differently. And I'm all about, you know, mitigation. And I always tell people, look, in 20 years, you won't know.
Yeah.
I get it. It's 20 years. But in 20 years, this place will look totally different.
Yeah, that's one of the, I mean, I find that particular with the heritage trees because they are, and for me, I'm not so much concerned about the shade or the air quality or the flood water, although those all matter to me.
Yeah.
I just love they're beautiful.
I do too.
I love looking at the big old oak trees. And, you know, we had that storage unit on Palafox that got a enormous, beautiful oak that, frankly, I didn't realize was there until it became a controversy. And all of a sudden, I'm like, oh, no. But that's also kind of the point is, if you don't know it's there, you know, did you really lose something if
they
tear it out?
Didn't see the forest for the trees.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I mean, Baptist, you know, I thought Baptist did it when they built the new hospital. Yeah. They did a really great thing. They preserved these two oak groves and incorporated them into their design and as part of their, you know, health and relaxation aesthetic. I mean, it's wonderful. But they didn't preserve all the trees. There were lots of trees that got torn down to make those hospital, right, to make that hospital go in.
Well, any development or developer worth their salt is going to try to do that. I mean, it brings value.
People
Absolutely.
Like it, right? You can sell the house better later on or sell the project better later on. All right, so I didn't really mean this to be all land development talk, but it's interesting to me, and I think people, we don't tend to spend enough time talking about this and to hear from somebody who's really an expert in the matter. I did want to ask you, the board in Santa Rosa particularly, you pay a lot of attention to this, okay?
Yes.
It got a significant improvement with the election, at least in terms of getting along and trying.
Yep.
It seems like it's not as happy right now. I don't know whether that's a byproduct of the people who are on it or the people who are making waves or whoever, but did you have more optimism in November than you have now, or do you feel like it's still got a lot of promise?
I think it still has a lot of promise. I think it's, you know, the honeymoon stage is probably past, and now we're getting down to business. You're kind of seeing, you know, which sides are forming, and it'll be interesting going forward. I will say that I've been a little disappointed in some of the things, especially with regards to zoning and variances, and that have come out recently. I've been very disappointed in them, but for the most part, I think they're getting along. way better.
It's better than the kindergarten it had been.
Yes, absolutely.
Therefore, you know,
not a high bar. Yeah,
it's better than it was 6 months ago.
Yeah.
Is not much of a compliment, right?
Correct.
It is better. Yeah. Well, Ed, thank you for stepping up. I know you had we've done this before, and it's always more than one voice. But I appreciate your perspective, and I really do. I appreciate that you build things, because if you didn't build things, we wouldn't have places to shop and live, and libraries and schools and businesses. And you know, it's been rumored that some jobs do depend on that.
Yes, a few.